Thanks for listening to Pod of Jake. I'm Jake. You can reach me anytime by emailing jake@blogofjake.com. I'm fortunate to have some sponsors supporting the show whose products I genuinely love and recommend. I'll start with a word on those so the rest of the episode will have no interruptions. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Aura. That's O-U-R-A. The Aura Ring, from my perspective, is the single best wearable on the market. I use it to measure my sleep, activity, and readiness on a daily basis. I bought my Aura Ring several months ago before talking with the company's CEO on the podcast. I haven't taken it off since. I believe what gets measured gets managed. So if you care at all about your health, which you should, you have to measure your sleep in order to manage it. Aura measures much more than just my time in bed. It tracks my REM sleep versus deep sleep, my resting heart rate and heart rate variability, my temperature, my activity, and much, much more. For $299, you can get your own Aura Ring on AuraRing.com. That's O-U-R-A-R-I-N-G.com. AuraRing.com. This episode is brought to you by Levels. Levels uses continuous glucose monitoring to track your blood sugar in real time. It allows me to see the impact that everything I do has on my metabolic health so that I can optimize my diet and exercise accordingly. Wearing the Levels patch, I feel like I'm living in the future. There's this moment when you raise your phone to the back of your arm, it vibrates and shows your glucose level right on the screen. It's this instantaneous look inside yourself, an in-the-moment snapshot of what's going on inside your body. And while it's only showing one simple measurement for now, it's enough for me to see the future. And that's exciting. It's exciting because I believe that we can live meaningfully longer and healthier lives than we do today, and I believe technologies like Levels will help us to get there. Levels is currently running an exclusive beta program with a waitlist of over 100,000 people, but you can skip the line and join Levels today by using my link in the show notes, levels.link/Jake. Again, that's levels.link/Jake. Okay, let's get into it. Thank you, Dan, for coming on and joining me on the podcast. It's great to have you on today, and I'm very much looking forward to the conversation. You are the co-founder and CEO of a cool company called Rewind.ai, just launched November 1st, 2022, I believe. So a little bit, one day more than a month before we're recording. And prior to that, you know, you had a great company you started in 2009, I believe, called Optimizely. And, you know, led that for around a decade. So lots of entrepreneurial experience. And before that, you're actually on the Obama campaign, I believe, and with Google before that. So long storied past, lots of success along the way. But the reason I reached out to talk was I saw the demo for your latest company, Rewind. And I just thought it was one of the coolest demos I've seen in a while. Basically, what it does is... you know, we'll get into the details, but it allows people to find anything that they've seen, said, or heard on their computer. So whether it's like a Google Doc or a Zoom video or whatever it might be, it's like a search for anything you've ever done on your computer, at least since you get the thing installed and whatnot. So super cool product, awesome demo. I encourage people to go check it out, but we'll get into it today, I'm sure. So anyway, Dan, thank you very much again for coming on. And I think the best place to start would be to just talk through your story a little bit from, you know, as early as you're willing to start to where you are today and some of the decisions you made along the way.
Thank you so much for having me and thrilled to share my story. I think probably the first formative experience on my journey was in college. I was always the kid, so I studied computer science, and I always was the kid that always tried to go well above and beyond on the homework assignments to the point where I think I probably single-handedly deterred most of my roommates or dormmates from ever pursuing computer science because they saw how hardcore I was. And at Stanford, they have this great philosophy of like any homework assignment, you could get like a check plus or a plus. And like the difference between a check plus and a plus was like 40 hours more effort. And ever since then, and I just would always go for it. So I've always had this like strong desire to build things. And in also in many ways, just try to blow people's minds, like to show them how technology can do things they never imagined were possible. And so so that's driven me for quite a while. You know, I studied computer science. I started a company actually that's not on my LinkedIn, but it's a company on my own that was inspired by my honors thesis in college. Really struggled with that, and ultimately said, you know what I should do? I should go learn the skills that would make me successful as an entrepreneur. And the best place I thought to do this, this was back in 2006, was Google. At the time, Google was kind of the place to be. So I applied to join their Associate Product Management Program and was lucky enough to get in. And this program was described by Larry Page at the time as engineers who know how to talk. So I took that, I guess, as a compliment, maybe not. And the interesting thing is I spent 2 years at Google really trying to learn the skills that would make me successful on my own as an entrepreneur, and actually didn't really learn that. You know, I learned about 80% of what I learned is like how to be successful at Google. And then 20% was kind of like how to build a team, how to, how to have engineers be inspired about what they work on. And ultimately, I left Google actually for a reason I never expected, which was to go to a political campaign. Barack Obama came to Google in November 2007. I actually snuck in to see him speak. I actually had no clue that he was so popular, and like there's a huge line outside. And so I hate to admit it, but I snuck back around Charlie's Cafe, the main auditorium where he was speaking, and a Secret Service person stopped me. You know, at the time he was a senator, but he stopped me and said, "Oh, sorry, you can't go past here." And I lied to the Secret Service. I'll admit that right now on your podcast. And I told him, "Actually, no, I have a meeting back there." And I pointed to some conference room that was far away. And he's like, "All right, go ahead. So I snuck in, jumped the line, and I saw him speak. And it really transformed my life. You know, he talked about how he wanted to take what we're doing at Google with evidence and science and feedback and data and bring that to the government. And the last thing he said when he came to Google was, "I want you to be involved." And this is like political euphemism for give me a bunch of donations. But I took him literally. And 2 weeks later, I flew to Chicago. I joined his campaign. Eventually, I quit my job. And that turned into a job as the director of analytics, where I learned the power of A/B testing. And out of that experience, I started my first successful company, which was Optimizely, which was really trying to build a product I wish we had in the Obama campaign back in 2007, 2008. Had an amazing journey there. Was very lucky to, team up with a co-founder, Pete Kumin, who also was an APM at Google. And we built that company to from zero to $120 million in annual recurring revenue, 450 employees, and it was an amazing ride. We ultimately ended up selling the company. And part of my experience at Optimizely, while I was at the CEO, I had another one of these transformative experiences where I started to go deaf. You know, in my 20s, I started to go deaf. I have a genetic condition called otosclerosis, which causes me to go deaf at an early age. And this seemingly bad news turned into a pretty amazing experience when I tried a hearing aid for the first time. I had gradually gone deaf for many years, and so I didn't realize how bad my hearing had gotten until the moment I tried a hearing aid for the first time. And it was magical. You know, to lose a sense and gain it back again feels like gaining a superpower. And ever since that moment, I have been on a hunt for ways that technology can augment human capabilities and give us superpowers. That led me to memory. You know, memory, just like our hearing, gradually gets worse as we get older. And studies show that about 90% of things are forgotten after just a week. And so I asked myself, if there's a hearing aid for hearing and glasses for vision, what's the equivalent for memory? And that's what started our company here at Rewind. You know, I'm happy to go into depth on your journey. We've had a big pivot. But ultimately, we're now at a product, like you described, Rewind. It's a search engine for your life. It lets you search anything you've seen, said, or heard. It's a macOS app that captures what you see, stores all the data locally. So from a privacy perspective, it really respects your privacy. We can't see the data. You know, your employer can't see the data. Even if law enforcement compelled us to try to get your data, we couldn't. And so it's a really cool product that helps you hopefully have the same experience I had trying a hearing aid for the first time. When I tried it on, I felt like I gained a superpower. And our goal is to give you the same superpower, but for memory instead.
Yeah, that's a great story, and I appreciate you sharing it. I always think it's really cool when people have things happen to them that, like you were talking about, going deaf in your 20s and, a seemingly bad thing you described it as, and like being able to turn that into something that's amazing. And, Rewind AI, you guys are only a month or so in right now, but obviously huge demand so far. And, it might be a product that tons of people around the world love, and who knows what else is to come. You guys are just getting started, but to be able to take that sort of bad thing and turn it into a really interesting product that, can give people superpowers to some extent, like you said, in terms of memory. It's just awesome. So really cool to hear that. Before we dive into Rewind, maybe we could spend a little bit of time on Optimizely, because you spent a decade of your life on it, and certainly went very well overall. I mean, at the time you were, I guess, not a first time founder, but first time post leaving Google and working with Obama. And I think you joined YC in 2010, I think a year after you founded it or something like that. And like you said, grew it to this, very large company in terms of both revenue and employees, voted best place to work, I saw, and things like this. So lots of success there before the acquisition in 2020. I guess one interesting thing to hear about maybe to start is, founding the company, just getting it off the ground in the very beginning, and participating in YC in 2010. That was very early for YC. I forget when exactly it started, but that was one of the first years, I think. And maybe that's wrong, you can correct me, but how was it early on in YC, first time sort of, or second time, trying to start a company, first time maybe for real, after having a couple of jobs under your belt? Curious to hear how that sort of era was and what YC was like in the early days.
Yeah, great question. In fact, as you asked it, I realized like the best answer to trying to learn the skills necessary to be an entrepreneur, the best answer was not to join Google, but to do YC. I'm a huge fan of YC. We were in the winter 2010 batch, and I think they had been around since about 2005, but it had only gotten bigger and bigger. And so we were very lucky to be part of YC before it's gotten to the scale it is now. We had a lot of personal love and attention from Jessica Livingston and Paul Graham, who are two of my idols. And it was incredible. And so I'll share a couple of things. Maybe it's more interesting to your audience, which is the things that aren't on my LinkedIn, which is, the two other failed startups before Optimizely. So I had one failed startup before Google. After the Obama campaign, if I'm really honest, the last thing I ever wanted to do was anything analytics related again. I had gained 50 pounds over a year, which is just what a political campaign does to you. I was so burnt out on anything to do with data, A/B testing, analytics. I was just like, I gotta do something else. And so after the campaign, the first thing we tried was I teamed up with Pete, who I mentioned earlier, and we thought, it would be cool. This is like the worst way, by the way, to come up with startup ideas. You know what would be cool is like, let's just write up on the whiteboard all the things we're interested in, all the cool ideas we have. And one of those ideas was a company called Carrot Sticks, which was a math game for kids. I've since purged this from my LinkedIn, but we started that as an idea, and it was really a dumb idea because me and Pete, neither of us were parents at the time, neither of us were kids, and neither of us were teachers. So we weren't at all any of the constituents for whom we were building. And so like we had no clue what we were doing. Like we had these endless debates on like, should the game be more pedagogical or more fun? And so we struggled with this for about 6 months. One of the biggest things we struggled with was distribution. And this is the biggest mistake or the biggest thing you don't learn at Google, because at Google, distribution is just like build a cool product. At the time I was working on Chrome, this was before it launched. You build a cool product, put the word Google in front of it, and you get a couple hundred thousand users. If they like it, you get a couple million users, and it grows from there. Like, that's not the case for every startup. Every startup requires a much more thoughtful plan toward distribution. So long story short, first idea after Carrot Sticks was, let's build a product to help us get distribution. And that was called Spreadly. We did that for about a month. And with that idea, actually, is what we applied to YC. We applied to YC with the company Spreadly. They accepted us. And basically 2 weeks, and Spreadly, the goal there was, how do we incentivize our users to spread the word to their friends? And basically, we would incentivize them by giving them discounts or make donations to charity. Long story short, it's a bad idea because like the social capital necessary to spam your friends is always more expensive than whatever discount we could give you. But the thing is, that got us into YC, and about 2 weeks into YC, we're like, boy, this thing's not working really well. But we had this major insight. This is probably the insight I'll share. Hopefully this helps others, is like building for yourself is so much easier than building for someone else. Spreadly was the product we wish we had that in Carrot Sticks to help us get distribution. Carrot Sticks was for a bunch of people we didn't really understand. And then we had this insight. I mean, it seems in hindsight so crazy. It was like, oh, what are other products that we wish we had? And now sufficient time had come from the campaign where I was like willing to go back into that world. And I thought, boy, you know what would be really great? A product to make it easy to do A/B testing. And so I whipped up a prototype over the weekend. I showed it to Paul Graham on one of the Tuesday lunch dinners. And immediately, into his credit, he's like, forget that other idea. do this. This is A-B testing for marketers. And to be honest, I'd probably never even met a marketer up until that point in my life, but he was right. And we did it and we took off. And even just in YC, we I think CareStix took 6 months to get a paying customer. Spreadly took 1 month to getting a paying customer. Optimizely took 1 day. Like we had just immediate market pull from the very beginning. So long answer to a short question, but hopefully that's answers it.
Oh yeah, that's really interesting. And I think one more question on Optimizely, at least before we jump to Rewind, but I do want to come back to what was the difference between, you said you had like that market pull right away on Optimizely when you pivoted during YC. And you could definitely say a market pull for Rewind.ai right now. So I'm curious to hear how those two experiences, 10 or 12 years apart have compared. But before we get to that, like you said, you scaled this thing from you and your co-founder to, I think, 400, 500 employees, great culture. And that's just, even just scaling with success, regardless of culture, is obviously very difficult. For people who are listening today, who might just be starting a company or joining an early one or something like that, what were some of the keys along the way from, going from zero to one and then, way beyond that to a very successful, very large company with a great culture? What were some of like the core principles, I guess, that or core, things that you kept in mind as you sort of scaled that company over the course of a decade?
Yeah, from zero to one, the biggest lesson we learned was build something people want. This is a very YC, this is like the core YC mantra. It's like on all their shirts. It seems really simple, but it's like the most important thing. Just build something people want. And that's the difference between market pull and not having market pull. You can easily delude yourself into thinking you're building something people want. And many people will lie to you and they'll say they'll want it, but they'll never pay for it. Or they say that they want it because they want to appease your ego. And the best book on how to cut through that is called The Mom Test. A short book. You can listen to it in one go if you're listening to audiobook. It's great. Anyway, so that's zero to one. Biggest lesson, build something people want. One to N, if I had to look back at that time, I would say I got more lucky than I was good. A couple things we got really lucky on were the initial team we hired were amazing cultural foundation, in some ways kind of the DNA, the stem cells that like grew into the rest of the company. I was not very purposeful about culture in the very, very early days. We started really thinking about culture and values around 30 people at Optimizely. And it turned out just the people we hired were really great embodiments of the culture we wanted, a culture around ownership and passion and trust and integrity and fearlessness and transparency. In fact, everything I just spells out an acronym called Optify, which was our cultural acronym at Optimizely. And so that was a really important part of our success, was just like living our values. I had seen so many companies talk the talk, but when it push came to shove, would they really walk the walk around their values? And I think that's the thing I did. I really tried to focus on, because I knew, in the people who joined me were there because of the mission. They're there about the values. And if I wanted to keep them and I wanted to keep them engaged, like they needed to see me as a leader who really embodied our values better than anyone. And so anytime I had an important decision, between anywhere from zero to 450 people, anytime I had an important decision, like we did layoffs, that was really hard. We had lots of situations where we were potentially close to the brink. In every one of those decisions, I always went back to our values. I always went back to our cultural values. And I tried to make sure, are we living up to our values? And so that's probably the biggest lesson I learned along the journey. Again, in hindsight, it's obvious that was a good idea. Maybe in the moment it wasn't. I guess the last thing I'll just say is on people. At the end of the day, it's a people business, even though we were a software company. And some of the mistakes I made were hiring the wrong people, and being in denial about whether they're a fit, and not firing them quickly enough. And I've actually really had to really deep down to my inner biggest lesson I learned from Optimizely is the biggest regrets I have fall into this class. It's my gut says we should do A. Somebody else thinks we should do B, board member, executive, somebody really smart and compelling, whatever. They want to do B. I end up kind of going against my gut. We'd end up doing B and it turns out poorly. There's plenty of times we went by A, my gut, and it turned out poorly. I don't remember any of them. All I remember are the times that I went against my gut feeling as a founder and did something that I didn't think was the right thing for the business and it turned out poorly. Those are the class of regrets I would have the most. And so, the lesson I've taken for today is I don't make those mistakes. I go with my gut. If I'm wrong, so be it. I can live with that. I can sleep at night with that. And so far we've been more right than wrong. So, I think that's maybe a lesson to share.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think about sometimes the things that you might regret. I think like when you know why you want to do something, and maybe the gut doesn't always know why, but at least it sort of knows. And like going against sort of knowing that you want to do a certain thing and going with the other one, that's like very regrettable. Whereas at least if you follow your gut or whatever your, maybe it is more of a mental thing, but at least it's sort of your own thing rather than imposed by others. If you sort of follow that and you know, like, despite all of these other people saying otherwise, like, I made this decision at this time for these reasons, and my gut was telling me to make that decision. I think that's like, and even if that doesn't turn out right, or well, or whatever, like, I think that's a much easier thing to get over than being like, I knew I should have done this other thing, but I listened to these other people, or whatever it is. I try to think about that, like, not going against myself. I can still be wrong, and that's fine, but like, just trusting sort of the information you have at the time is all you can have, and make the best decision and go with it. When it comes to what you're doing now, obviously you had to step away from Optimizely to free up some time to figure out what you wanted to do next. How did you know when it was time to move on?
I had been itching for this idea for many years while at Optimizely, and it actually made it harder to be at Optimizely because I had this kind of grass is greener feeling. Because I in my when I turned 30, I had a hearing aid, and so that was many years before we ended up selling the company. So in that sense, I've always wanted to do what we're doing today. It just took me a long time to get there. It's a hard decision, and in many ways, also I felt a huge obligation to stick it out with Optimizely. I felt, if I'm really honest, I felt kind of trapped. I didn't. I What I really wanted to do is what we're doing today, and it's a tough place to be. Where like my job as the founder and CEO of the company was to inspire people, hire great people, retain them. But if deep down I really wanted to do something else, it's almost impossible. I felt like an imposter. I knew I wanted to do this for a while, mostly because it's just so damn exciting. To be able to give humans perfect memory, it's just such a more exciting problem. Nothing against Optimizely, but it's such a more exciting problem than like helping people get clicks on their website, or to slightly improve a conversion rate. That's part of the problem is like these ideas become like infections. They become these like things in your mind that you can't think about anything else. So I was much more pulled to this idea. In fact, I honestly, I probably should have given myself more of a break between Optimizely and Rewind, but I was just so excited to pursue this idea that I couldn't not do it. A lot of investors or other founders are like, what do you think? You went right from one huge, a decade long journey as a founder to doing it again? Like, what were you thinking? But it's like, I needed to do it. That's what motivates me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it sounds like, maybe you purged a couple of things from your LinkedIn, but as far as I could tell, there was like no break in between. I was like, wow, this guy really, we just went from a decade, marathon on one thing and just picked up and went right to the next one, excuse me. So it's, I guess some of your friends might be asking why, but sounds like you really wanted to work on this for a long time even before you decided to leave. And there's sort of a breadcrumb or a clue on that. I think you started a nonprofit maybe, or a foundation of some sort, with a mission to fund and conduct scientific research to accelerate the path towards human mind emulation. I think you did that a few years before you left. What did you have in mind with that organization? And I don't know if it still exists or whatnot. Obviously, what you're working on now is, very closely related to that in terms of, helping people basically improve their memory for anything that they've seen on their computer, which we'll get to with Rewind. But what was the initial sort of inception of that idea and that foundation?
Yeah, so I did start that foundation. I was at Optimizely, and I had this idea that I couldn't get out of my head, which is it's pretty probably nonconformist. Like probably most people don't think this is true, but I thought it, and I have to go back to figure out where the seed first came from. But I came to the decision that basically your body will fail you. At least your biological body will fail you. And I actually think what was the inspiration was I was really into like, oh, like wouldn't it be nice to like live longer and healthier? And then I looked at the data and like human longevity is going down. It's not going up. And especially over the last few years, like the average life, mortality rate for humans is going the wrong direction. And people are talking about exponential improvements in biology and biotech. Like it's not turning into data. Like it's people are dying younger than they were before. And so I had this insight, okay, your biological body will fail you, but what makes you you is not your body, it's your mind. And so mind emulation enables your mind to continue to live on after your body has died. That's the theory, and it's, you know, our mission is to fund and conduct scientific research to accelerate that path toward human mind emulation. And you know, I'm happy to go into depth on any of this, but you know, I believe that, you know, you, what makes you you is an emergent property of your physical structure. And if you can take that physical structure of your nervous system, not just your brain, but your, probably your entire nervous system, emulate it non-biologically, and then in theory, you could actually emulate what makes you you in a digital substrate, you know. You know, it's kind of a crazy idea, but that's, I think I read a paper by Jeff Lichtman out of Harvard where they were essentially taking mouse brains and slicing them into 10 nanometer slices, scanning it with electron microscope and doing connectomics, connecting it all up together. And, you know, so I just had this crazy idea. So I started this foundation, and in fact, YC funded it. They gave us some money, and it's still active. Yeah, we're funding research today, and we're not doing it ourselves, but we fund research from others to pursue this mission, this long-term. It's, you know, more of a basic science stage right now. And you know, actually, during this journey, one of the sort of sparks that got lit that inspired Rewind, I was talking to a neuroscientist at Stanford, and I sort of pitched him what I just told you. You know, neuroscientists can actually fall into two camps. One can be like completely believers of what I just described. Another camp would be like, you're crazy. This will never happen. This is not even possible. It's not true. Like, what makes you? Anyway, so anyway, this neuroscientist was a skeptic. And one of the things he asked me was, well, even if you could do this, even if this was possible, which he didn't think was possible, even if it was, like, how would you be sufficiently satisfied it was enough you that the emulation, you know, wasn't just a, you know, a psychological zombie, it was just actually you? And that got me started thinking, well, what if we could actually capture what makes you you while you're alive? Everything you hear, say, and see, for example. And so, you know, that was kind of the spark that also created Rewind, which is like, yeah, it would be great to have a couple decades of everything I've seen, said, or heard, use that at least maybe to do error correction on an emulation, if that emulation were possible, maybe in a few decades. Now you've got a lot of this data. You can ask, you know, the emulation certain things that only you, what makes you you, would have seen. So yeah, those are kind of how those two ideas are connected.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I like that you brought up the longevity point. I've had a bunch of people on the podcast previously who are working on sort of radical life extension, taking all sorts of different angles at, you know, how to approach the problem, but more of like an engineering mindset than, you know, traditional medicine and things like this. And, you know, I know that there's a bunch of people working sort of on the angle that as you've described it, that the foundation's out there funding and supporting. I haven't had anyone working on that in particular, I don't think, on the podcast today, but it's a really interesting angle and brings up a lot of questions. And for some people it's really scary, and for some people it's really hopeful. And I don't know, from my perspective, like, so long as people have sort of the freedom to you know, choose whether or not to do certain things, I'd like to see the possibility for sort of human life extension, you know, healthy human life extension to become available in the years to come. And if you zoom out on that chart, which, you know, maybe US life expectancy, or maybe even globally, I haven't really looked at it, but maybe it's down in the last few years or something like this. But if you zoom out, it's, to me, it's always been really encouraging. If you look at the last, you know, 100 years or so, you know, the human average human lifespan has gone up quite a lot. And granted, some of it was due to, you know, solving issues with, you know, child mortality and various things and vaccines and whatnot, but I don't think the jury's totally out that we can't, you know, start to extend the maximum a little bit, and certainly continue to extend the average. And I just hope that you know, some of this stuff comes along in my lifetime and the lifetime of people that I know and love. So anyway, you know, coming back to Rewind now, we're finally there. You guys launched on November 1st. I understand, as of some tweet that I saw, which I think was like 3 weeks after launch, you guys already had 300,000 signups. It's like 14,000 a day. And I think you're only taking like 1,000 a week off the wait list. So tons of people banging down the door, trying to get a hold of this product. Can you introduce it to people who have never heard of it or seen the demo or have no idea what we're talking about here?
I sure can, but I do want to correct you on one thing. Life expectancy has increased since 1880 from about 39 years to, I think, 78. But it has petered out. It's plateaued. And not only that, but if you look at healthcare spending over that period of time, and certainly in the last decade, the, you know, if you look at the sort of compound growth rate of healthcare spending and sort of the things we do to spend money to live longer, the spending per capita versus the life expectancy per capita, it's It's astronomical. It went from, in 1960, $146 per capita to, you know, 2019, $11,000. And in the same period of time, that all that money we're spending on healthcare, life span has only improved from 70 years to 78 years. So I'm a skeptic on biology. I think our bodies are going to fail. And the best way to extend life is to move from a biological substrate, which is flawed, to a non-biological substrate. If you compare what I just said to something like the durability of an AWS S3 bucket, which, you know, over a specific year is, you know, 99 with, like, I think 10 nines after that, you know, the amount of loss you're going to get from emulating you non-biologically is anyway, much better. Anyway, that's not, we don't have to dive into it, but I'm a skeptic on the ability to live, extend life, biologically, given the data.
Well, so sorry, no worries. I just want to ask, cause I don't think if I said anything that disputed what you just said, I didn't intend to, I think, it certainly, like, it makes sense to me. I haven't seen the data, but that the, you know, spending has gone way up without any impact and maybe even negative impact. But I would ask you, you know, obviously you're focused on this one angle, but do you think it's worth funding, you know, not that you have to do it personally or anything like that, but my sort of sense is that people haven't tried to address aging directly, that we've gone after various diseases, and it's like, you know, it's like whack-a-mole, right? Like, you sort of like hit one of the things and the other one pops up over here. And so if you, you know, even if you beat cancer or cure cancer, there's some stat that it's like, you know, you might live 3 or 5 more years on average, but probably heart disease or Alzheimer's or something's going to get you. We haven't really tried to attack aging. Do you think it's worth just sort of, before giving up on the body, going after some, you know, angles that haven't been tried before? Or are you, you know, sort of substantially convinced that we have to sort of move on and that there's sort of a max there, and that the sort of human mind emulation path is really the only way to go?
Well, I think both are hard and probably both worth pursuing, but I think there's an overinflated sense that technology just gets better on itself. It doesn't. It takes people to get better. We, in fact, technology gets worse over time. If you look at just rockets and SpaceX, like, and so I think everyone just assumes, oh, exponentially things are going to get better and it's going to be great. But, like, the data shows that even though we do spend a lot of money trying to live longer and tackle aging, there's a lot of great companies out there. You know, Loyal is one of them that is tackling this with dogs first. But, you know, it's just kind of a choice of, like, where you want to invest your money. And, like, if you think of your life today as like a floppy disk, and all of the efforts around aging is like to try to make the edges of your floppy disk less likely to demagnetize, like, great. Or you could figure out a way to copy the contents of your floppy disk into something like Amazon S3. And that ultimately is much more durable because it's a much better foundation on which to build. So I just think that, you know, I mean, if the data were showing that we were getting returns from all of these investments and helping live longer, I would be totally of a different mind. And maybe that happens, and maybe there's some big breakthrough. But I don't think, I just think it's like a common misconception that people don't spend money trying to live longer. There's just a huge industry around medicine, around longevity. I don't believe there's a whack-a-mole approach. I think that's kind of a useful thing for people to say to help justify getting funded for a longevity company. I also think there's a lot of rich billionaires out there who just frankly want to live a lot longer, and so they fund these people. So I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, and I think it's probably worth investing more in ways to take what makes you and make it non-biological, where I think the funding is abysmal. Like, there's so many neuroscientists who would love to do basic science on this topic. But in neuroscience, it's kind of a verboten topic. Like, the idea that, like, you know, even that what makes you is can be emulated non-biologically is like kind of a third rail. Like, people can't really talk about it. So I think that there's a disproportionate funding on the biology side, and compared to on the emulation side.
Mm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I guess my view is just sort of grow the pie, but I totally understand. I think at least I understand your perspective, and I'm glad that someone's out there funding that, because I think it's, you know, like I said, I'm sort of all hands on deck as far as what I would like to see.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to...
I'd love to be proven wrong.
Yep. So anyway, coming back to the focus of Rewind at AI, 300,000 signups last time I checked, probably more since then. What's it been like, you know, just going from launch just a month ago to where you guys are now? Bring us up to speed and explain, if you could please explain, like, sort of what the product is for people who are unfamiliar, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. Rewind is a search engine for your life. Our vision is to give humans perfect memory. And what that means today, you know, what we launched a month and a day ago, is a macOS app that you can install. Once you install it, it starts capturing your screen, starts storing that locally, and compresses the data that it captures, 3,000 times smaller than the raw data. So effectively, the data that you're capturing can be stored, many years of local data can be stored on your hard drive. And the big benefit of that is it doesn't go to the cloud. All of the data stays local to your machine, which is great from a privacy perspective. It also makes the product really fast and search really fast, but mostly from a privacy perspective, we store all the data locally. And just 2 days ago, we actually also just launched the ability to store, capture, transcribe anything that you hear and say. So that's our product today. Again, it's a macOS app. We're starting there, and I can go into why, but there's a lot of technological reasons why macOS is the right place to start. But ultimately, our vision is to give humans perfect memory. So we expect that to expand to your mobile devices, eventually to your watch. And when Apple launches their much rumored Apple Glasses, will be a killer app on that platform. And to catch up to speed, it's been crazy. About a year ago, we were thinking about pivoting to what is now Rewind. And I got advice from Elad Gil, one of our investors. I think he was on your program in the past. And he offered this really amazing piece of advice. And at the time, I didn't believe him. But now in hindsight, he's totally right. He said this. He said, things that work tend to work really fast. And at the time, we were struggling with another approach to this problem called Scribe. And we had grown, we had users, but it wasn't like taking off. It wasn't like lightning in a bottle. And I compare that to Rewind, where like the first day we were like just completely overwhelmed with the response. We've got hundreds of thousands of signups. We just actually doubled the amount of people we're putting off the wait list. We're doing 2,000 a week now, not just 1,000. So if you do the math on that, that means somebody who signed up just this week is going to have to wait over a year. I don't want that to be the case. I hope we'll be able to massively accelerate the rate at which we onboard people. But right now, we don't have anybody on the team that does customer support. So we're just like, we need people. That's our limiting factor. As soon as we have that, we actually just closed a candidate who's starting soon. That will actually help us, dramatically ramp up our ability to onboard.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's this concept of being able to search for anything you've ever done, seen, said, or heard on your computer, and as you sort of alluded to, maybe other devices as well, whether it's phone or glasses or otherwise. One thing that sort of was interesting for me to see, like, first of all, like I said, I watched the demo and I was like, wow, like this is just, I just didn't know that something like that really. The concept just hadn't really occurred to me. And as I'm seeing you go through and you search for a certain term, and it's like, all right, well, here's a Google Doc where you had it, and here's an email where this term came up, and then text, and Zoom, and the Zoom was like a screen share, and it's capturing the audio from the screen share from the Zoom and like transcribing it and finding the word that you searched in there. So it's just like a super comprehensive search for anything you've ever done, whether it's visual or audio on your computer, and being able to just sort of search your memory. And, you just need like a little keyword or whatever, and then you can go find whatever it is that you're sort of searching for that you obviously don't remember. And this is like sort of a unique thing. It's like the concept of, Google wouldn't have really made sense like 10 years before Google or something like this. Or maybe that's a bad example, but there's all sorts of new things that just sort of are hard to envision before they come to be, and then they're like so obvious and you want to use them all the time. And just since watching the demo, I've had like several times where I'm like, I want to, this is like a use case for Rewind. Like I want to go back and find this thing that I was just looking at. Like even in preparing for this podcast, I like was reading some article about, I don't know what it was. I think the acquisition of Optimizely or something like this. And was having trouble finding like the exact article that I was reading. I was like, I need Rewind for this. So it's really interesting. I could see it just becoming like, your guys' whole goal is to like augment, human capabilities. And I could see it just becoming really second nature, for people. What have been some of like the early pieces of feedback or even from your own experience or people on the team's experience? What are people saying about, the way that they're using the product? Have there been surprises or things that you think are really cool, or, things that aren't working as well as you'd like them to that you want to improve upon? I'm just curious, sort of some of the early feedback, and obviously the eruption in demand has been, I don't think you could have expected that. So that's been great. But I'm just curious sort of how people have liked it thus far.
Yeah, the boy, have we learned so much and so surprised by some of the feedback. I think the biggest thing that we're surprised by is that we kind of hit a nerve. You know, we hit something with this that I didn't expect because it's kind of a new behavior. You know, and you never know with a new behavior, is this going to take off or not? And it really did. And I think part of the reason it did is, you know, people never thought, sure, people accepted that they would just have bad memories. They would accept that, like, I guess that was a tweet I'm never going to go back to. I remember somebody said something cool, but like, I can't find it. Twitter search sucks. Or I swear somebody told me this thing, but it turns out it was like a text message instead of an email. And they thought it was an email or searching their email. I couldn't find it. And I think just people have just come to accept that their memory is flawed and they don't know how bad, they just know that they're gonna live their life in a world where they can't find anything they've, you know, everything they've seen, said, or heard in the past. You know, and then maybe there's some good analogs to this. Like before, you know, imagine a world before MapQuest and Google Maps. Like your entire brain had to think about things like cross streets and like how to get from point A to point B. And now we just completely outsource that part of our brain to a machine that does a way better job of it. It looks at traffic, live traffic, it tells you which direction to go, it avoids obstacles. And you just don't think about it. You just go from point A to point B and like you get to where you want to be better, faster, cheaper than you did before. And like that's the kind of thing we want to do with rewind. We want to take the whole part of your brain that is associated with recall and trying to go back to that detail that you're trying to find and have the machine do it way better than you could ever do it. And so that was kind of the biggest, I guess, surprise, is that that's a problem that people immediately resonate with. And you know, in particular, there's a lot of neurodivergent folks, people have ADHD who really were desperate for this. I mean, I got in the last month just inundated with emails of people just begging to get higher up on the wait list because they're just a daily struggle around this challenge of even going back just a few minutes. You know, I'm in a meeting, somebody said something to me and I just didn't hear what they said or I didn't process and they wanted to just go back a few seconds. You know, that's a key use case, like very common use case. We thought actually search would be the big thing people really want, but it's even just jogging your memory. That's why the name of the company is Rewind. You can just rewind just a few seconds, see what the person just said, and you know, and you're able to just be more present. You know, this is the other thing that surprises is sort of taking over note-taking, you know, like note-taking in and of itself, if you think about it, is a very crazy thing to do. Like, especially people who take notes on paper, they're taking a tree, chopping it down, turning it into a little stick, taking, you know, into the pencil, into the paper, and then scribbling things down. But like, how possibly could that be the best possible way to like capture what you might want? You know, you need foresight to know what you want to take notes on. It distracts you from being present. And so this is like just a better way to do it. You don't need to have foresight. You don't need to take notes. You can be present. You can listen. And if you needed to, and occasionally you do, occasionally you don't, you can go back to those moments to recall them. So I could go on and on. We've learned so much. It's like, this is also a great example of why launching early is a good idea. You know, we had internally, not everyone was like, is the product ready enough? You know, like there was definitely some debate, but you know, that's why learning and launching, you know, launching lets you learn and gives you sort of a sense of, you know, the things that maybe you thought were true, but aren't, but vice versa. And that's been, it's been a great journey so far. We feel really lucky that we kind of hit on something that really matters to people.
Yeah, it's you mentioned the note-taking thing, and I'm like thinking, like, I'm just, for whatever reason, I'm just like not good at taking notes. I like, maybe I have short, you know, bad attention or whatever it is. I just can't, you know, I could take notes for like 10 minutes, and then after that, I'm like, they're just not going to be good notes, just like not something that I'm great at. And so the thought that I'll never have to take notes again on a call is like pretty intriguing, and I'm sure for a lot of people as well. It's just such an interesting tool, and you know, transparently, I appreciate it. I got off the wait list, and so I'm good to go. But I actually don't have a Mac with the M1, so I need to get a new computer in order to use Rewind.ai. And I understand why you guys are reserving it for that. It sounds like it just really wasn't even possible, which is actually really, you know, people always ask the question of like, why now for a startup? You guys actually have like a super legit one. Like, this basically wasn't possible before Apple came out with the M1, M2. Is that understanding pretty correct?
Yeah, that's exactly it. We're standing on the shoulders of giants. We utilize basically every part of what Apple calls their system on a chip, or SoC, which basically means running Rewind doesn't tax system resources. You know, you're obviously, most M1s, I think all of them, don't have fans anyway, but like you don't hear your fan flying. You know, we don't have your CPU spiking. You know, and not only that, but we can store the data, you know, you can compress it and store it so well that you don't even notice your hard drive filling up. And it actually does work on Intel Macs. Like, we started off with like, oh, we'll just launch for Intel and Apple Silicon, but it's so much better on Apple Silicon that we're like, well, let's just not even set people up to fail or have a suboptimal experience. And so, sorry, we just put in a feature, we just put in a conditional, like if Intel, don't let them finish the installation, even though it would work, it just is not gonna be nearly as delightful. And interestingly, we didn't expect this, but after we made that change, we've had more than one person email me a receipt of the new Apple silicon machine they bought just to use Rewind, which I also totally did not expect that somebody would love our product so much they would go out of the way and buy a multi-$1,000 machine just for this one piece of software.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I wasn't even joking. Like I will, I need, I was sort of due anyway, so it's a little bit of a, you know, an excuse, but this might be like sort of the straw on the camel's back or whatever that actually pushes me to like go to the Apple store and get the new computer and you know, transfer everything and everything like that. I'm very excited to use it, obviously. How do you
Thank you.
guys think about, you know, you talk about, you know, like find anything you've ever seen, said or heard. The sort of asterisk on it, I guess, is like, you know, within, for now, you know, within basically something that's been on your computer. But you mentioned like the Apple glasses that might be coming out. I don't know. I don't really know the details of that, but, just in general, how do you think of like, you know, the thing is like people talk about like the metaverse. And then some people are like, well, we're sort of already in it. Like we're spending, you know, several hours sort of at a minimum, most people, on their computer on a given day, or at least on their computer plus their phone. And for some people, it's like almost every waking hour. And then you can imagine this would just be sort of furthered with AR glasses, or if VR starts to get more prevalent and things like this. How do you think about like expanding from, you know, where you are today with Rewind to actually potentially like fulfilling that vision of like not just anything on your computer, but like anything?
Well, I've thought a lot about it. And one thing I realized, I'll go back to the very first thing I mentioned of just like my desire to like, you know, blow people's minds. And you know, back in college, like, you know, I realized that sometimes I can get way ahead of where like most normal people are when it comes to like these kinds of things. And so in this case, I really wanted to crawl, walk, run around this concept of augmenting your memory. You know, I think, it, you know, and there's still people today think what we're doing is kind of weird and creepy and different. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm not losing sleep over that. You know, we have kind of this philosophy that, at the end of the day, there are going to be people who are detractors on this kind of vision. They're kind of creeped out about it. But I think it was Gary, now the head of YC, who said that your haters will always hate you. The only real battle is over all the people who haven't decided yet. And so like we're trying to kind of change people's hearts and minds about this idea, and sort of normalize the idea of capturing what you see, say, and hear, and the utility and value of that, even just on your own machine, will be so great that it immediately flips a bit in people's minds, thinking like, well, how could I live life without this? Like, can you imagine going back to a world without Google Maps, and now all of a sudden you have to remember like cross streets and how to get to places? Like, no, you don't. Your computer does it for you, and you'd much rather do that for the rest of your life. And so we want to get to that state for as many people as we can. And that's why we started with the Mac, because I think that's a much easier sell from a privacy perspective. The data is all local. We can't access it. You know, your employer can't access it. And so we thought, okay, we'll start there as the foundation. Let's make that the place where, and not only that, but the technology to do that is even easier. You know, with Apple Silicon, you know, the APIs that are available, like it makes the total sense to start there. But again, our vision is to give humans perfect memory, and you do a lot of things that aren't on your machine, and certainly not a lot of things that aren't on a Mac. So we are definitely going to pursue going beyond the Mac. I alluded to some of the devices. You know, we're kind of constrained also by like what the technology enables. We don't know what the Apple glasses, if they're ever going to launch, will do or be able capable of. But you know, we want to be on the forefront of that movement of capturing what you hear, say, and see, make it searchable. And over time, we think we can sort of make it more and more comfortable for people to say, yeah, this is a no-brainer. How can I not live life this? You know, why would I live life where, you know, if my four-year-old says something adorable and cute, and I don't want to remember for the rest of my life, but I know as soon as they stop saying it, it's going to leave my mind, why not capture it and be able to go back to that moment over and over again? You know, that's something we want to be able to do. And, you know, technology is just the means to the end of being able to do that.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I just think it's one of those things where like, I said at the top of the episode, but I would really encourage people to go and check out the demo on YouTube. Probably just search rewind.ai/YouTube or demo on YouTube and find it there. But it was like really pretty mind blowing for me. And again, can't wait to try the product. But anyway, Dan, I know you're super busy and trying to get all these signups onboarded and everything like that, and you know, advance the product and have some time to do some other things as well. So I really appreciate you taking the time today and spending some with me and recording this podcast, and very much looking forward to trying Rewind and you know, following its progress for years to come. Where do you want to point people to go and, I guess to the waitlist or to your Twitter, what's the best place for people to sort of get involved?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I hope it was interesting to folks listening. If you're interested in trying Rewind, go to rewind.ai. I hope today you can sign up, but hopefully if you're listening to this in the not too distant future, you can just use it right away. Again, all the data is stored locally on your own machine. So as soon as we've got the people on our team to support you and answer your questions, we will be making it as accessible as possible. And yeah, the demo's on there as well. If you go to rewind.ai, the YouTube video's there. So that's the best place to go is rewind.ai. Sign up for early access. If you happen to be a software engineer who is a expert at either Swift, or any kind of, it doesn't have to be Mac OS, but if you're an iOS developer, that's great too. Or a software engineer who has interest and or experience in large language models. Spoiler, we're going to do some really cool things there. Please do apply as well. We're definitely very actively hiring. We have a long roadmap of exciting things we want to do and only a very small team of 11 people today doing it. So go to rewind.ai and check us out.
Awesome. And I love that teaser at the end. I'm now sort of left thinking of like a GPT that's trained on your memory or something like this, but we'll leave it at that as a spoiler. I don't know what it is, and I don't need you to spoil anything for anyone. But again, very excited to see where this all heads, and thank you again for the time.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.